Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The author Thomas Pynchon is famously reclusive. So reclusive, in fact, he didn't even show up to accept the National Book Award back in 1974 for his novel Gravity's Rainbow. He doesn't do interviews. He definitely doesn't do cameras. But he does do The Simpsons?
Here's your quote. Thomas Pynchon loved this book almost as much as he loves cameras. Hey, over here, have your picture taken with a reclusive author. Today only, we'll throw in a free autograph.
That is, in fact, the voice of author Thomas Pynchon, playing himself a couple of years back on an episode of The Simpsons. And it wasn't the only time he'd made a cameo on that show. Naturally, he was portrayed with a bag over his head. But I guess we at least now know what Thomas Pynchon sounds like. Or at least what his voice sounds like, because ever since he published his first novel, V, back in 1963, readers have had a pretty good idea of what his books sound like. They're riddled with near-constant references to music, and his 2009 book, Inherent Vice, is no exception. That book has now been adapted into a film directed by Paul Thomas Anderson and featuring appearances by Joaquin Phoenix, Josh Brolin, Reese Witherspoon, Benicio del Toro, Owen Wilson, and even the singer Joanna Newsom. Now, before it gets its world premiere this weekend at the New York Film Festival, we thought we'd invite Rob Sheffield, author and contributing editor at Rolling Stone, to talk a bit about the music featured in Inherent Vice. Rob, good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
So, Pynchon is notoriously tough, and I have to say, I have not read Inherent Vice yet, and none of us have seen the film. So, but already, lots of talk circulating about music and stuff like that. So kind of take us into the world of Pynchon's music here.
Well, it's funny because he's such a psychedelic guy in his music tastes. And
Fitting for a novel that seems to be set at the end of the psychedelic rock era.
Yeah, it's 1970. It's L.A. It's deep in the psychedelic era where people are talking constantly about the Electric Prunes and the Rolling Stones. And at one point, one of the hippie girls is wearing one of the detective's Pearls Before Swine t-shirts.
Oh,
which,
wow.
I don't think that ever happened in a Raymond Chandler novel.
No. And that's a deep cut, too.
Yes.
That's not a band that a lot of people knew or remember. So he's clearly kind of tapping into the music as what? A way is it verisimilitude? Is it a way of kind of sketching the mood and the scene?
It sets the scene, definitely, the way in an old-time kind of noir you'd have the scene in the nightclub where someone's singing, you know, the bluesy torch song. The same kind of thing happens here, except there's this psychedelic soundtrack to all the characters' adventures, and sometimes it's ominous and sometimes it's melodious, but everybody's constantly weaving music references into everything they say, even the most casual sentence, so that he says, "My story is sad but true," as Dion would say. Or, "But then, one fine day," as the Chiffons would put it. You know, there's music references everywhere.
So now you've picked some songs for us from Inherent Vice. How do the Surfaris and Wipeout fit into the... First of all, what is the story? It's basically a detective tale, right?
Yeah, it's basically a detective tale where there's... standard thing. There's a few women who aren't necessarily what they seem, and a detective who thinks he's looking at one mystery, and it turns out to be a deeper mystery. But of course, it's the end of the '60s. Everybody's got a lot of paranoia. It's the Nixon era, the post Woodstock, post Manson, post Altamont era, and everybody's a little more nervous and paranoid than they were a few years ago.
And there's a fair amount of marijuana being smoked, which
may contribute.
So back to the Surfaris. How does Wipeout fit in?
There's a great scene where he goes to a surfer bar to look for clues, and it's a bar full of hardcore surfers, and everybody likes to talk about there's this mysterious wave that you ride it and it takes you under and you're never heard from again. It's the cosmic wave that destroys you. And right before you die, what you hear is the cackle at the beginning of Wipeout.
Classic bit of surf rock from the Surfaris, and that, of course, is Wipeout, which is mentioned in Thomas Pynchon's book, Inherent Vice. And Rob Sheffield, we're assuming some of this music will make its way into the film as well?
Some. Haven't seen the film, but the music is so dense, really, in all of Pynchon's novels. It's funny because the laugh at the beginning of Wipeout, that's almost like a parody of the beginning of Gravity's Rainbow, where people hear this screaming across the sky and they know that means there's about to be an air raid. It's funny that that same kind of sense of constantly listening to the world around you is something that's in all his books, but it's rock and roll here.
So Thomas Pynchon's Inherent Vice being made into a film by Paul Thomas Anderson. It premieres on October 4th. At the New York Film Festival, here in New York, obviously. Rob Sheffield is with us on Soundcheck to talk about music in Pynchon's book. And so what does it tell us about Pynchon himself as a music fan, the eclecticism? The playlist that goes with this book is literally like 300 songs long.
It's amazing. Yes. Drugs and music, two things he knows very intimately. Because there's so much about Thomas Pynchon that we don't know, that he never reveals. The music references in his books are really the most concrete clues. Even going back to V, his first book in 63, a lot of it is based on his friendship with Richard Farina, who, of course, you know, was a significant singer-songwriter who died very young.
Right.
And was
in
Pynchon's
the folk
best
world,
friend,
yeah.
Yes, in college. And there's a lot of that sort of, you know, early Bob Dylan, Ornette Coleman, Thelonious Monk kind of musical ambience in V. And what we mostly know about Pynchon is that anything he writes, it's full of musical references, even in the most casual way.
And they have in the past been very casual. There's nothing that ever feels forced. It seems to grow organically out of the characters that he's created. And in this playlist that you've put together for us, Rob, we come next to Pink Floyd for a very kind of nerdy, geeky reason, right?
Well, it's a psychedelic song that has, I guess, the connection to surf rock in the sort of Farfisa organ. That there's a part where there's a musician in the book who's playing an organ that Rick Wright from Pink Floyd recommended to him. And it's really strange that this organ pops up at strange moments during the book. And at one point, Doc, the detective, he's just driving, and he turns up the song on the radio. It just happens to be Interstellar Overdrive, which is this almost 10-minute Pink Floyd classic instrumental.
It's a classic psychedelic freakout from Rick Wright and the rest of the gang of Pink Floyd. Fallen into a Cheech and Chong routine. Pink Floyd's Interstellar Overdrive, a real head trip from the late 60s, mentioned, I was going to say in passing. Is any of the music mentioned in Thomas Pynchon's book genuinely in passing, or are we supposed to take note of it and derive something from it?
It's funny because sometimes he'll just use it as just he'll drop a reference and not follow up on it, you know, when he says, you know, and then he slipped into unconsciousness, as Jim Morrison would say, and that's never mentioned again, whereas the Pink Floyd song and that keyboard motif, it shows up a few times in the book.
So Rob Sheffield's with us, author and contributing editor at Rolling Stone, giving us a kind of quick sound check perusal of some of the music mentioned in Thomas Pynchon's book Inherent Vice. The movie premieres October 4th here in New York at the New York Film Festival. So the novel is set in Southern California in the 1960s, 1970. So you've got your surf rock, you've got the Beach Boys. There's a lot of stuff from the 60s.
Yeah.
The truly execrable song Sugar Sugar by the Archies gets a mention. Anything there that surprised you, that kind of stood out, that was unexpected?
Well, a lot. There's music from different worlds. There's this amazing scene where he goes to a bar and there's a torch singer and she's doing the old standard, "It Never Entered My Mind," which the doc, the detective, that's not his thing. And he mentions that he hates torch songs and he avoids that kind of thing. And that song, powerful, amazing song that just steals over him and just really, you know, imposes itself on his heart. And this isn't a song he knows or has heard already, but it really sets the mood. You could tell that there's some serious betrayal about to happen. Mm.
Let's hear Julie London's version. I mean, he doesn't mention her, right,
no.
by name?
No.
But the song is "It Never Entered My Mind," one of the musical surprises on this Thomas Pynchon playlist.
Once I laughed when I heard you say that I'd be playing solitaire, uneasy in my easy chair. It never entered my mind. Once you told me I was mistaken, that I'd awaken with the sun and order orange juice for one. It never entered my mind.
That is Julie London and her version of It Never Entered My Mind, another song that Thomas Pynchon references in the novel Inherent Vice. Rob Sheffield is with us on Soundcheck. He reviewed the book for Rolling Stone back in 2009. Will you be reviewing the film when it opens on October 4th?
Yes, I'm really excited for it. It's Paul Thomas Anderson, whose sensibility, like, interlaces with Pynchon's in so many interesting ways.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I saw from him was There Will Be Blood, which is pretty dark stuff. And this seems like it is a much, you know, while there's like paranoia, as you said before, it seems like there's more of a kind of comic feel to this.
Yeah, it's funny because Paul Thomas Anderson is such a poet of Southern California, and, you know, Boogie Nights is such a classic late 70s, early 80s movie about California. It's so interesting to think of him going to town on that early 70s, late 60s sort of vibe, and when everything's a lot more innocent.
Yeah. So Thomas Pynchon's novel, now made into a film by Paul Thomas Anderson. The world premiere, the film premiere is October 4th at the New York Film Festival. I guess it is the world premiere. I mean, no one's seen the thing yet.
No.
Lyrics play into a lot of Pynchon's writing. And, you know, as with a lot of novelists who use music as a subject, you know, they often take the opportunity to weave in like fictional bands and fictional lyrics. So do we get a kind of a sense of Thomas Pynchon as a frustrated songwriter, as a lyricist here?
Definitely. It's amazing how many songs he writes in the book that he'll just say, this is the song that was playing on the radio. And and he'll just have his lyrics. He's been doing that always in, mm-hmm. in his novels. There are songs that he writes. One in his first novel was set to music by the Inset Trust on their album Hoboken Saturday Night, The Eyes of a New York Woman. So people could put these songs to music, I guess, if he permitted that sort of thing. But it's amazing how much you get a sense of him as a sort of frustrated songwriter.
And do the musical references ever actually advance the plot? Are they things that, you know, the narrative hinges on?
There are definitely times where you get a sense of what's going to happen or what has happened, or you realize more what's happened. The way, for instance, that last song, It Never Entered My Mind, he's in a bar and he's not expecting anything, and he hears this song that, you know, as it says, it turns him to jello. And, you know, and there's this sense that what he thought was going to happen changes very dramatically after that point. I don't want to spoil what passes for a plot in this intricately plotted. I don't think anybody's figured out enough of the plot to spoil it after all these years. But
now, you also suggested that we listen to something from the Stones. And, of course, it's 1970. The Stones are at the height of their fame. But the song you've chosen is not one of the big hits. How does this song weave its way into the story?
It's funny. At one point, Doc the Detective, he's driving along and he's just turning on the radio and he hears the Stones singing, "Something Happened to Me Yesterday." And it's funny because it sets the scene, because you think, wow, like this was a time when you could just be driving in your car radio and turn it on and somebody's playing this incredibly strange Stones deep cut about, you know, discovering psychedelics in 1966. Very early, strange sort of Stones song. And that sort of sets the environment, where songs like this are just part of the environment, part of the background.
This is Something Happened to Me Yesterday from the Rolling Stones.
Something happened to me yesterday. Something I can't speak of right away. Something happened to me. Something also groovy. Something happened to me yesterday. He don't know if it's right or wrong. Maybe he should tell someone. He's not sure just what it was, or if it's against the law. Something. Something very strange I hear you say. You're talking in a most peculiar way. But something really threw me. Something also groovy. Something happened to me yesterday.
As Rob Sheffield said, a deep cut from the Rolling Stones out of the Thomas Pynchon playbook. That is called Something Happened to Me Yesterday. It's mentioned in the novel Inherent Vice. Rob, we just don't know how many, if any, of these songs will make it into the film version that Paul Thomas Anderson has done. We do know Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead is returning. He did the score for There Will Be Blood and is doing the soundtrack for this movie as well.
Which should be amazing. He seems to be very much on Pynchon's wavelength. Radiohead, of course, have lots of Thomas Pynchon references. Their website is Waste, after the crying of Lot 49. So that's a deep, deep ongoing relationship there.
And in terms of the songs that you've grown accustomed to as a part of the story, having read and reviewed the book, what do they simply have to keep musically in the film?
Well, because surf music is such a key part of the film. You know, one of the missing guys is a saxophonist in a surf rock band. And there's all these jokes about how completely terrible the sax playing is in all surf rock hits. And that's part of the brilliance of it, that you have to be a really precise kind of terrible saxophonist to play those sax solos. So I think Pipeline is the classic surf song that really, it shows up so many times in the book. The Shantae's Pipeline is kind of the ultimate anonymous surf instrumental that you'd hear playing in the background in some movie or on some car radio, and it's this mysterious sort of song that weaves its way all the way through the novel.
Will it be in the film? We'll find out on October 4th at the New York Film Festival when Paul Thomas Anderson's version of Thomas Pynchon's Inherent Vice hits the screen. Rob Sheffield will be reviewing it, but he's been giving us a bit of a preview here on Soundcheck today. And Rob, always a pleasure to see you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, John.
Hey guys, so in the conversation we just had with Rob Sheffield, I talked about how no one has seen the new movie adaptation of Inherent Vice yet. Well, that's still true, but they did just release a trailer for the film. Here's a snippet.
Michael Z. Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
And Mickey Wolfman.
Has vanished.
So where would I find him?
He's technically Jewish, but wants to be a Nazi.
And a girl don't necessarily want to get into difficulties with those folks.
You can watch the entire trailer and find out more about the film at soundcheck.org.